In the Old West, towns like Tombstone and Tucson often saw differences with a shootout. Sometimes a college bowl game does the same. These are the Cowboys of Wyoming. And this season, they ruled the Western Athletic Conference. Points to them are like notches on a gun. The more, the better. This is an offense that respects everyone, but fears no one. His name is Christofferson, Ryan Christofferson. This running back never backs down. The sight of tight end Mike Jones sends fear into most men. The strong arm of the Cowboys and their leader is quarterback Joe Hughes, whose favorite target is the slick, quick, All-America receiver Ryan Yarborough.
I've heard of you.
Is Wyatt Earp still the sheriff of this town?
I'm retired.
That's Doc Holliday. Is he retired too?
Not me. I'm in my prime.
It's not Earp or Holliday who present a problem for these Cowboys. It's a group of Wildcats fresh off the train from Kansas State who aim to prove they're the toughest in Tucson. Andre Coleman is K-State's most dangerous offensive weapon, and All-America safety Jamie Mendez takes no prisoners.
Not revenge he's after.
So if the Wildcats want to be the law in Tucson, they know they'll have to go through the Cowboys.
I think there's going to be a showdown
tonight. The Cowboys meet the Wildcats.
Oh my God!
In the fifth annual Weiser Lock Copper Bowl. A celebration in the city of Tucson, Arizona, nestled among four majestic mountain ranges and covered by a purple-orange sky as the sun sets in the west. Tucson, this old silver and copper mining town, has embraced the over 15,000 Kansas State fans who have come from 13 plane loads and 88 bus loads and loads of enthusiasm to Tucson to watch them battle the Wyoming Cowboys.
What a way to get things started for the penultimate KSO Classic of the summer. I don't know that we're going to have a better intro in any other game we do, obviously this year and certainly beyond when this series comes back next summer, because my word, that is just one of the glaring differences of how games are treated back then versus how games are treated now. And we'll get into it from a bunch of different angles. But I mean, this was a game where you had a 2.5 minute intro where they are throwing in clips from Tombstone, which I doubt that Disney had the rights to. So they probably were going a little above and beyond for that. They got six players from the game to go and dress up as old Western Cowboys and shoot that promo. I'm just disappointed that we only got two cats in there and we didn't get more like Wyoming had four of them, because I would have loved to have seen some of the other guys dressed up. I mean, even better, like, could you imagine if they had gotten Bill to do it? That would have been electric.
Chad May would have been pretty electric at the Cowboys.
Yeah, and I mean, Kevin Harlan setting the stage there. It's a great voice for this setting. And just, I mean, looking at the whole collection of that, it was awesome. I love that. And it set the tone for what turned out to be one of my, if not my favorite game that we've gone back and watched this year. And it's not just because they suckered me in so hard with their intro and the great production value. But I mean, the game itself was awesome to watch. And it's not many times that you can go back and watch a game from 30 plus years ago that you know the outcome to and still feel like, oh, that was fun. That was like, I came out of it with serious enjoyment, and I haven't been able to say that for a lot of the games that we watched, because the playmaking in this game, the style, and I mean, you can get into it, but you said, like, we watched the 2003 Nebraska game. That was a blowout, but it wasn't really that fun. It was kind of ugly. This was not the case for the Copper Bowl.
No, it was definitely not the case for the Copper Bowl. You watched a little bit of this game before I did, and you sent me a text about the intro, and I'm like, okay, like that. We've had some pretty wild intros before. Nothing could prepare you for that. Like, I,
yeah, there's no way you would have guessed that that's what I meant when I said, oh, yeah, it's pretty awesome.
No, I had no idea. And we've watched blowouts, we watched close games. This might be because I haven't written down what I have as a game score yet, because I'm like trying to come off a little bit of the high and the ecstasy that I felt from this game. So I haven't put it down yet, but like this is probably going to be my top or second favorite game that we've watched so far. The Nebraska game in 03, like you said, was a blowout, but it left you wanting a little bit more. Like it felt like K-State should have, instead of winning that game 38-9, maybe won it 52-9 or 52-7. And like you really feel even better about how that game played out. I was telling you before we got started that I've watched probably half of these with my wife since she didn't go to K-State, and using this as kind of like a history lesson for like old games. And I said, like, we're watching this game from 1993. I don't really know what to expect. Like, production wise, this could look terrible. From a stylistic football standpoint, this could look terrible. I came away from this game. It got me to like live tweet while I was watching this two or three times. No other game that we've done has gotten me to do that. So I joked with you. I've joked with my wife. Like, I don't know if it's like the high that I felt from like football season being right on the doorstep, or was this game like truly awesome? But since you've talked about it, like we've talked about it before we started recording, I think we've came to agree this game was just awesome.
Yeah, it was an awesome game. Like, I just, and from the start, like, one of the first plays we'll look at is one of JJ Smith's runs to start, and it's like, I'd never watched JJ Smith run the ball in my life. And it, you know, he gets out there and you're like, yeah, this is fun to watch. Like, it was just the way it all played out and how it looked for this team. Like, it's nice to look back on it. And because I'm not going to go find other 1993 games to look at, but to find, you know, one of the more consequential teams before things got ramped up to a big level, like Bill's first bowl team, and this getting to be the experience, I think it's good that people can go back and look at it. And I think, you know, we can say objectively, since we weren't alive for it and we'd never seen it until this week, this is a fun thing to go back and watch. Like, I don't think your memories that you have of this season, if you're a K-State fan that was alive when this took place, I don't think you're going to embellish them. I don't think it's possible, because it was genuinely that awesome to watch and experience. And these players were fun, talented, and obviously so many of them mean a lot to the history of K-State football now when you look back on it 32 years later, and you can see that, oh, yeah, that's a notable name. That's a notable name. All these guys that are, you know, legends for what they did for one reason or another at K-State.
And we'll get into this, like, more as the game goes on, but, like, the really awesome thing to, like, really go back and watch this game for the first time 32 years later, this game kind of felt like a celebration of, we're not going to be just a doormat anymore. Like, it felt so big. And I know that one of the highlights of this entire series for me has been like, oh, Kevin Harlan's on the call for ESPN, or like the other game that we'll be publishing today. It's like, oh, Charles Davis is the analyst, and then Aaron Andrews and Craig Sager are on the sidelines. Like, it's been like something like really cool and special to see like those people that are like legends in the broadcasting industry really get their start during some of these games. So like it also just feels huge because Kevin Harlan is doing the game for ESPN also with Craig James. So we'll talk about that.
Yeah, I guess you can have him in the early category of things that didn't age well, Craig James. A couple of things on how this game started before we even got to the game. So before you got that awesome intro, you had in 1993 Lee Corso talking already about Team X didn't want to be there at bowl games. So if you're trying to say that this is like a new fad that's come about in the last 10 to 15 years, it's been around since the 90s when, I mean, bowl games were limited. Like, these were still treated like a big deal, whether you were playing in the Fiesta Bowl, the Sugar Bowl, or you were playing in the Copper Bowl. And he's talking about, they didn't want to be there. I think maybe alluding to the fact that he was worried that K-State wouldn't want to be, which is kind of a wild assertion considering that K-State had only been to one other bowl game in program history. And like you said, this was – bowl games were meant to be celebrations of your season. And this is back when that was legitimately true. Like, you can see by the way that K-State fans traveled. You can see by the way the players were fired up and how they treated this game, all of that. But you also got in the pregame, because it was Chris Fowler, Lee Corso, and Glenn Mason, KU head football coach Glenn Mason at the time, on pregame. And he did pick K-State to win the game. A couple of other things that I want to note before the game actually kicked off. The sideline reporter for this, Mike Adomley, he had a wild jacket on, a very like
I have that
80s, early 90s jacket that was ESPN branded, was insane. And then also the Wyoming coach threw a massive dip in before kickoff of this game. And it just, you know, tight shot on him by the ESPN cameras. So that is those were some of the pregame notes that I had here that I wanted to throw out.
Yeah, seeing the KU coach Glenn Mason was like a wild jump scare moment as soon as I saw him on the screen. But then, especially because like what we saw, like there wasn't a real context to it, made a lot of sense. Like before they were going to go to halftime and be like, KU, the only team that played Florida State and Nebraska who were playing for the national championship. It's like, oh, okay, that makes a lot more sense.
I mean, and what a scheduling move right there. If you're KU to just load it up with Florida State on top of everything. But, you know, this is back when, like, teams did stuff like that and had had fun non-conference opponents for the most part. But, yeah, that was tough year for them. Starting the year, that was a kickoff classic game. That was a 93 neutral site. They played at Giant Stadium and lost 42-0 to Florida State. Yeah.
Sounds about right for that era.
Yeah, tough stretch for the Jayhawks there. They had to face what ended up being 5 top 25 teams in 1993. They lost all of them, as you might imagine. They did win the border war game with Missouri 28-0 that year, though. So I guess, you know, credit to them. And also painful enough, two of those losses that came to the top 25 teams, they lost by one to K-State in Manhattan, and they lost by one to Nebraska in Lawrence. So they were right on the doorstep of getting those wins, and they couldn't do it. But they got blasted in non-conference play. They lost by 42 to FSU, by 17 to Michigan State, and by 25 to Utah.
That's an insane non-conference.
They played 5 non-conference games this year because they also played Colorado State and Western Carolina.
All right, so that makes sense because, you know, if you're going to play 11 or 12 games, you only got 7.
Well, and I think this is still part of the era where back then those kickoff games, like you got to play that as like an extra game on your schedule. So that's why most teams were playing 11 games back then, and that's why KU played 12. But anyways, we do not care. Let's get on and give everybody the starting lineups from this game as I adjust the toy headset for my daughter that her head is too big for it to stay on. Greater than the 99th percentile on head size for my freshly 2-year-old daughter, so it runs in the family. Look at the starting lineups here. There's a look at your wide receivers and tight ends, Mitch Running, Andre Coleman, Kevin Lockett, and Brad Seib. And then you've got the offensive lineman right there, anchored by Barrett Brooks at left tackle. Out of the same hometown of Missouri as Xavier Sneed. So shout out to Florissant, somewhere in the St. Louis area. It's about all I can give you from there.
Ludicrous that's your fun fact on what's going on here.
I just for some reason always remember that about Xavier Sneed. It's like they say he's from St. Louis, but actually like he's got a real town. I don't know. I'm kind of weird about that. Like say where you're actually from, not like the general area. Because I had a kid in college that was on my floor freshman year that he was actually from Joliet, Illinois. But he would always just say, oh, I'm from Chicago. It's like, well, no, you're not. You're really not. Just say it. You know, it's big enough. Most people can be aware of it, like whatever. Or, you know, you'll encounter the people in that come from like Kansas City area, and they're like, I'm from Kansas City. It's like, are you really? Like, I know where Overland Park is. I've heard of Olathe before. Like, you're not sneaking one past the goalie here. Anyways, they're your linebackers, Laird Veach, Kirby Hocut, Purcell Gaskins. That's just the athletic directors is what you can call this crew, yeah, right here. We'll get into that on how this team.
And then a freak athlete apparently in Purcell Gaskins. Holy cow.
Yeah. I don't know why they gave us Mitch running twice, but we also have JJ Smith on there to look at. There are the DBs, Kenny McIntyre, Thomas Randolph, Kit Rawlings, and Jamie Mendez. And then your defensive line with John Butler, Tim Coulson, Daryl Harbor, and Dirk Oakes. So, and look, Dirk Oakes from Overland Park, Kansas, not Kansas City, just not, you know, I don't know, bugaboo of mine. A couple of other things that I want to throw out here before we get into some clips, Drew. This is a look at how you could get scores on your phone in 1993. They ran a promo that you could call a number, and for 95 cents a minute, calls average 2 minutes, you could call 1-900-976-ESPN, and you would get scores and updates on sports given to you over the phone. That is without a doubt one of the signs of the time in this. And then one other thing that I want to point out is that K-State did have a kicker rocking the one bar face mask. So
I had both of those things written down. I can't believe, like, I couldn't imagine living in that time period where if you wanted scores on your phone, you had to call and then had to pay for it.
Like, yeah. You know, that's one of those things that, like, right around the time that, like, you and I would have been getting our first phones, that was kind of starting to phase out where there was a lot more just, like, you know, unlimited or whatever. But I can still remember, like, the first phone that I had, my parents were like, absolutely no texting. Like, it's going to cost us money. No texting. This is only to call us, you know, when you need to be picked up from the Y or the golf course or something. And so then, like, I can remember there was a kid that was in my sixth grade class or something, and he sent me a text one night, and I was just like freaking out. I was like, no, I can't get text. I can't get text. Like, this is not good. That was back in the old Samsung flip phone era that I had. So yeah, we've come a long ways with technology since then. And now I think most people are unlimited data too, which that was also a big whopping deal. There's a stretch in high school. We started with like Altel, and we had unlimited on Altel, and then it got switched to Verizon. So we got grandfathered in, but then I got a new phone in like my junior year of high school. It was not unlimited data. And that was bad news bears for me. I left the Masters on in the background on my phone one day on Watch ESPN. Oh, it's like day two of the cycle, and we were already at our data limit. So I think my parents quickly learned we got to just pony up for the extra. Anyways, let's get on to the game that K-State would ultimately win by a big, hefty margin. And our first play to look at is on K-State's first offensive possession after Wyoming has already kind of shot themselves in the foot a number of times to prevent themselves from scoring like touchdowns. And K-State came out and decided to capitalize, and it was set up by J.J. Smith's big run.
Hand off. Big hole. They can run well in Kansas State. And look at J.J. Smith fly. Down to the 38 of Wyoming. And 30 yards on the run up the middle.
Doesn't want to give up the big play. Linebacker gets confused there. He's not able to see the lane. Look at the running lane. First play of the game, you can't give up big plays like that. There are two running lanes that he could have gone through. That's how big the hole was.
So J.J. Smith big gash there. We'll see more of that later. And he finished it off later in the drive with a short little touchdown.
Kansas State has got the lead. J.J. Smith.
The crowd shots pretty impressive all throughout this game, and it gives you the idea of just what the K-State contingent was like. I mean, you heard Kevin Harlan in the intro say 15,000 were there. I don't know. It was probably more than that based off of the looks and the way that everybody talks about the Copper Bowl.
It looked and sounded like more than 15,000. Also, that first play is still funny to me that, you know, you get instant replay back then, which is crazy. And the technology to write stuff down, and Craig James picks the wrong hole that J.J. Smith ran through. That was just like a sign of like, oh, it's going to be a long night for Wyoming's defense. And it was.
Yeah, it was. And it's because they weren't necessarily able to stay off the field for very long because their offense kind of did some pretty dumb things, too. Including after getting down, deciding that now was the time for a trick play that their wide receiver didn't have his bearings to know. Maybe I don't throw a ball into double coverage.
That's coming up on New Year's Eve. Second down and two. Christopherson, the end around to Yarbrough. Does he want to throw? Yes, he does. Into the end zone. Intercepted by McIntyre. No, by Randall. Thomas Randall picks him off. His fifth interception this season, and it couldn't have come at a better time.
Look on the Wyoming coach's face kind of says it all right there. That's you probably can't be doing that when you're the team out of the whack trying to beat a top 25 Big 8 team. And that was a pretty good indicator of what was to come throughout the game for Wyoming.
Yeah, that was pretty rough. Also, great play call for back then. Like that, again, more advanced play calling than I expected. And then Thomas Randolph, one of the best aesthetics I think that we've seen from any player in a KSO Classic. He looks incredible in the uniform.
Why I say that was kind of a common theme. You watch through this game, and that first drive, Wyoming moves the ball pretty well on K-State, and you're going, oh, how does this end up being a blowout if they look this lost early? But then you see
for like the stupid false start, they'd be up 7-0.
Yeah, but it's the penalties set them back, so that kills momentum, and then they go out and they're turning the ball over left and right, and then again, J.J. Smith, as we talked about, continues to kind of do his
thing. Time to all week. 7-5. This is the electrifying runner, J.J. Smith. J.J. Smith has only been averaging 68 yards a game. That was a pickup of 29, and already he has 86 for the night.
So you hear Kevin Harlan there list his numbers, averaging under 70 a game, already over 85 for this one. I will say, I think Bill might have tried to outsmart himself in this, where this was such a pass happier team than most that they're like, we're going to come out and run the ball early on. Because they had to settle for some field goals early in the game that you go, I don't know, like maybe play your game a little bit more. It wasn't until really the Andre Coleman punt return that we'll get to in a little bit where it felt like this team engaged into what they were throughout the entirety of that season.
Yeah, after the punt return for a touchdown, it was like this game's over. There was no way that Wyoming was going to come back after that.
Yeah. Officiating, what were your thoughts from this game, Drew? A lot of flags,
a lot of late flags. Like, I have beef with the officials in this game and in the 0-2 Iowa State game that we're going to get into later on today. If you're going to call a false start, why do you let Wyoming throw the ball and it be a touchdown? Like, and then you have to call it back because of a false start. Like, you could have just blew the play dead. And there's a play in the 0-2 Iowa State game where K-State, like, runs basically a whole play, and then the play gets blown dead, like right before L's about to throw it because of a false start. Like, if you're going to call something, have a little bit of speed with it. You know, you don't have to wait.
Yeah. Well,
and call it back.
There were a handful of calls in this game that if replay was a thing, it would have overturned the call on the field, I think. And this is one of them, and it cost K-State a great defensive touchdown.
There's a fumble. McIntyre picked it up, but they blew the whistle.
Yeah, I mean, no world was that guy down.
Yeah, clear as day that he wasn't down. And old white hat just comes jogging in over there with his, oh, he was down. Like, I mean, I don't know how I would have survived with officials back in this era. Because, I mean, I already don't like them. But, boy, they were worse 30 years ago than they are today. I'll give them credit for that. K-State did eventually get the ball, though, and the drive ends with another touchdown, this time courtesy of a Chad May quarterback sneak, and one of the ones that Bill Snyder loved, where you're not at the 1 yard line, you're going to have to get a couple of yards on the sneak. And given the officiating, I don't even know if Chad May actually got in on this one, but they just assumed that he was.
Did you notice the stutter step?
Yes.
The stutter step allowed it to get open. A big bull runner like Schiller wouldn't have done it.
Quarterback keeper for May, and a 2-touchdown lead for Kansas State. He's in there.
So there you go. K-State goes up 2 scores, and they get the ball back. They have to punt. But on that punt, a candidate for what I think might be, I don't know if it's the most notable moment from the broadcast or things that age poorly from the broadcast, and that's broadcasters maybe throwing the athletes under the bus. But here's about a minute plus of Craig James having a conversation about K-State punter Chad Romano's hair.
So punting is important tonight for Wyoming, because if Kansas State continues to struggle like they are, they're going to get the kind of field position which they enjoy right now.
Well, we have seen that Kansas State has had long possessions. They've carried the ball down the field. Wyoming needs a chance to have short possessions. And who cut that guy's hair?
I want the name of the barber, so I don't go to him. Second down and 10. Audible now by Hughes. Hughes pointing for a block, and he gets it. And he's close to a first down. He's at midfield, and he picks it up.
We got to go back, guys. Look, we got to go back. Now, I've got a kid that has what they call a chili bowl haircut, but it isn't this bad. Now, look at the lines and all the free air movement down here, the flow. This is an ESPN2 haircut. This guy could be an announcer. There's your ESPN2 guy right there. ESPN2, he's looking for a job. Hire him.
That poor kid's got his relatives all over the country going, oh, my goodness.
I'll actually give Craig James credit there. I thought he did a nice job drawing the ESPN2 logo at that time. But yeah, I'm not sure that really flies in today's age.
Probably not. Just wild that, you know, this wasn't like a one-off from Craig James. Like, he went back to it after
with the telestrator. He felt the need to telestrate it.
Yeah, insane. But, you know, that was one of the more notable moments for the broadcast, but I don't think it's the most notable one.
No. I'm interested to see what you think that is. Yeah, Craig James was addicted to the telestrator. He also had a moment later on where I think this, you know, these guys that are typically in the studio, they get to go out and call a game, and it's basically like a vacation for them, and they're like caged animals, and now they're free. And so he's like, I got this telestrator. I'm going to use it whenever I want. He thought like he was the funniest guy in the world with his idea for a sign that he would write for Lee Corso. And it made zero sense when he was trying to explain it. But yeah, we're not Craig James people here. Obviously we know that he did Mike Leach dirty. Anyway,
among other things,
probably should have locked Craig James in the closet, not his son. anyways, let's roll on, because the next thing also involves a punt that we're going to take a look at. And it is a
sign made up. Everybody has their own signs. My sign, it just didn't make air tonight. It says, "Hey, Lee, I'm out of the booth. I'm or out of the studio. I'm in the booth.
What would your banner look like? If you were going to draw a banner, what would it look like?
I mean, it would be one of those, hey, Lee, look where I am. Here I am. You know, it'd be one of these things that, you know, I'm over here, coach, and you know, I can't hear you, but I'm sure you're saying something that I totally disagree with.
Here comes a punt now for Wyoming. And plenty of time for Gregor. And here's one of the most exciting return men in the college game. Andre Coleman breaking some tackles, getting some blocking, and he's got an entourage up the sideline. Folks, he's gone.
A lot of camera cuts in this game, so you get a lot of good shots of different people in different stages of ecstasy or grief, like the Wyoming lineman that you got to see there after the Andre Coleman punt return. We know K-State special teams, all this stuff, but getting to watch Andre Coleman in action. This leads up to through 2002 as well, when we talk about Iowa State later today. I think K-State was just like, yeah, we have to return every kick that comes our way. We have to make something out of it. And obviously, when you got playmakers like that, it's impressive. So that was a great punt return. And then the next time that K-State finds the end zone is another masterclass by Andre Coleman. But credit to Chad May for just standing in there and taking the shot of all shots in this game.
The shotgun. Good blocking for May. And throws across his body to Coleman. It's a foot race down the sideline. Touchdown, Kansas State. Chad May is down in the elation that is now surrounding Andre Coleman, who has absolutely been scintillating tonight. That was good for 61 yards.
I mean, that was...
That throw is unbelievable. Like, to throw it across your body while getting destroyed, and then Andre Coleman was just faster than every single player on Wyoming's roster. They weren't catching him. I have three nominees for best play, because I was like, oh... Well, that's got to be the best play while I was watching it live. And then I was like, oh, no, maybe it's this one. And then maybe it's this one. So that is one of the nominees along with the Andre Coleman punt return that I have.
Yeah. Well, I think I have the third one coming up for you. So K-State will go and force a fumble that the refs actually allow to play out this time. And then on the ensuing drive, they face a fourth and long. And, you know, as was made famous in this era, by Mitch Holders, not in this game against KU later on, the forget the first down, go for the business. That was kind of what K-State decided to do here as they just kept pummeling Wyoming.
Now he's back against the wall, stranded at his 20. To Christopherson. They come at him in waves. There's a fumble on the play. At the 14, recovered by... No indication. Yep, Kansas State has it. Kansas State has it. The second turnover tonight by Wyoming.
Dynamite at creating big plays.
Now fourth and seven. And they're going for it. 7:53 left in the third quarter. May down the sideline. Catch. Kevin Lockett, the freshman, touchdown, Kansas State, 30-yard touchdown reception.
secondary scrambling, trying to find people. They've done a nice job of getting people open, but that's just a great catch. I mean, an outstanding catch by Lockett, a freshman that goes up, grabs the ball at its highest point.
Six. Kevin Lockett, number 83. Extra point here by Wright.
Does that stand as a touchdown call today, or did his foot go out of bounds at the one-yard line before he got in?
Definitely close. For me, it comes down to sometimes, like, was this play really cool or not? That play was sick, so yeah. I'd keep it as a touchdown. I think that that might end up being what I have for best play, but we'll see.
All right. Well,
also he's a freshman. You think that Kevin Lockett guy ends up being pretty good?
He did end up being pretty good. You know, he set some records that stood for a while until, you know, his son showed up, which I've talked about before. That's got to be probably one of the cooler things for him, is that, you know, the only guy that could break your records was your son. So yeah, that's, I mean, everybody knows obviously what the Lockett family has meant to K-State football, but you know, getting to see kind of the start of it right there in Kevin's freshman season, and then how it goes on from there was a good look. K-State finally got their chance to get a defensive touchdown later on in the game, because you can't blow an interception dead.
Oh, it's picked off. And on the near side, Kenny McIntyre is going to go in for six. Folks, we told you about Thomas Randolph and Jamie Mendez. We only alluded to McIntyre. He has been the defensive star of the game.
So there you go. They end up finding the end zone, and things go swimmingly from there. Last thing that I have to show you, this was from earlier in the game, but it highlights this era, and I know a lot of people would be disappointed if you didn't get it. We have Crash Eckler highlights of him just being a psychopath on the football field.
Prentice Rome. There's some heavy hitting going on down there. And that is the kamikaze on defense, Eckler. He is mad. He's absolutely mad.
Mike Eckler, he went in, he used to play baseball. He said, "Coach, let me walk on." They said, "Well, okay." They put him on special teams. He started making all the plays. Check him out. Ooh! He isn't finished. He's looking for the play. You think he's pumped? This guy, is a wild man from the word go. Jim Leavitt, leave it there, defensive coordinator, says he's my favorite player. He's an insane guy that he just is. Wants to hit.
Flipping around like a rag doll out there.
Zero surprise that Jim Leavitt would be all about Mike Eckler.
Every team needs a guy like that.
Yeah, just wild to watch. He didn't even do anything on the play except, like, basically truck himself by running at full speed into a Wyoming player, and then gets up and is, like, looking to jump in on more action, and then is run around like crazy and, like, is pumped about it. I will say, though, I think there is an element to football where, like, the hardest hits, and if they're done in, like, a flush way, you don't even really feel the contact as much. Like, I can remember – hardest I ever got hit in a football game. Very few football games that I played in. I ended this football after fifth grade. I was like, I really don't need this, you know. I don't like playing it enough to just sit on the bench the entire time. But I refer to it as the best play I could have made. We were blowing somebody out, so that's why I was in the game on the defensive line. And I thought I had a clear shot at getting a sack. And I was ready and ready. And next thing I know, this big guard steps back and just pops me, puts me flat on my back. Hardest I'd ever been hit. And like the ref came up to me, was like, "Are you good?" I was like, "I was fine." I didn't even feel it. But it's all the other little ones. Like, "Oh, this kind of sucks. This isn't very enjoyable." So yeah, I am soft. I did not enjoy playing football, but mainly because I don't know. I had better things to do, and I wasn't cool with riding the pine just to go to practice multiple times a week. You know how, like, that is not a fun experience as, like, a 10-year-old and you're like, oh, we have practice multiple times this week in 95 degree weather in August and September. Why? What's the point of this? I think this is insane. So I stuck to basketball and baseball. So
that hit was like the perfect like culmination of like how that era was even officiated. Like Crash Eckler would be ejected from every single game in 2025.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. There would definitely be some disqualifications from the game there. All right, let's dive in now to our categories. Best play. You talked about the candidates that were there. Where are you going?
I think that I'm going with the Lockett catch. I mean, the fact that it was fourth down brings it up a little bit, even though the game was kind of out of hand at that point. But perfect throw by Chad May. Even better catch by Kevin Lockett. But if you say either of the other two, like, I'm right there with you. Like, this is like a 1A, 1B, 1C best play. This game has the most best play nominees of any game that we've done.
Yeah, I'm going with the Chad May across the body throw, gets himself jacked up, and Andre Coleman scampers for six. I think that's, to me, the play that stood out the most. But you can't go wrong because, yeah, then that Kevin Lockett catch happened. I went, holy cow, like, that's pretty impressive too. So definitely a lot of contenders in this game. And, you know, that one run that I showed earlier too, like if J.J. Smith can get past just the last guy and get in the end zone, like it's a pretty impressive run that he just turned into a touchdown. That would have been a candidate as well. The worst play from this game, it's got to be Wyoming trying the trick play that leads to just a back-breaking interception. Like you weren't really all that out of it yet. It was second and two. There was zero reason to force it like that, but you put the ball in the hands of a guy that's not used to throwing it. He thinks I have to throw it on this play. That's a problem. So that's the worst play to come out of this game for me.
My worst play was so inconsequential, but it was when K-State got one of their punts blocked, which leads to a Wyoming touchdown. Like very inconsequential, but like this game could have been 52-10 if special teams did their part and made sure that there wasn't a block. Special teams.
Well, but it could have also been 45-10 because, you know, special teams did score a touchdown.
Special teams in this game was definitely a mixed bag because he also got, I believe it was a missed field goal.
Yes. There was, yeah. No, it was a missed PAT.
Missed PAT.
Yeah. All right. So those are the best and the worst plays from this game. What aged well in your mind here, Drew?
We're going to start pretty easy, and we're tossing the ball up for the first one aged well, and it's Kevin Harlan.
That was the very first one that I had on here, is that Kevin Harlan goes from calling the Copper Bowl to, you know, now being one of the most recognizable names in broadcasting, which it's funny, too, on that topic. Like, he's only the number three guy for CBS. Like, obviously, Nance is ahead of him, and Ian Eagle is two, but CBS has a good stable of play-by-play guys for their football coverage. I think their analysts are a little bit questionable at times. But
CBS's lineup is so stacked on the NFL. Like, Kevin Harlan's their number three, and he would probably be Fox's number one now.
Okay, well, please don't throw Kevin Burkhardt under the bus like
that. I think Kevin Burkhardt is fine. Like, but I would rather have Kevin Harlan than Kevin Burkhardt.
Yeah. My first one that I'll throw out there, because I also had Kevin Harlan, the production value. Like, we saw it in the intro. It was electric. They had the MetLife blimp there for the Copper Bowl floating around, getting aerial shots. They just, like, they didn't spare any expense. I mean, you had your main guys doing pre-halftime and post-game for this. And Fowler and Corso. So I like just the attention to detail and how much effort they put into games like this back then is significant. And I will say this kind of ties into what my next one would have been. I think college football, and we're seeing it now, has benefited from a lesser pool. Like, it was better when there was a lesser pool of bowl games, conferences were smaller, everything just felt a little bit more important. It's the same way that, like, I look at Major League Baseball. Like, I look back and some people would hate it because, you know, short attention spans and all this other stuff, but I'd rather it go back to where the American League only played American League teams and National League only played National League teams. And so the only time you saw each other was in the World Series. Now, if you want to say like, hey, you can have six games each year against your NL rival. So like the Royals would play the Cardinals every year and the Dodgers and Angels would play every year and the Mets and the Yankees would play every year. Okay, that's fine. But I just think like it makes everything feel more impactful and more meaningful. And I think that's why you see so much production value put into this is I don't know off the top of my head how many bowl games there were in 1993, but like the Copper Bowl was one of not many. And so that's where I think you look now and why things have become so devalued is that 6-6 teams do get to go to bowl games. You're in these 16, 18 team conferences. And so it just, everything is less important. There's less up for grabs. And that's why if you go back and look at this era, college football was and this is why I hate that conference championships are getting devalued. The number one goal for every college football team should be to win your conference championship because for the first multiple decades of the sport, you didn't get to decide who the national champion was on the field. It was just based off of your play. And so the only thing you had to play for was your conference championship, whether that was doing it just in the season or you had a conference championship game. But that was a benefit of having a smaller process, a smaller pool of these games and opportunities. And I think the nostalgia and the things that make college sports what they are much better if you have that still. So I just, that was one of those things that got me thinking like bigger brain on it all. Like, man, like this era was better for college football because it wasn't as just expanded out, like stretched out. And now we're kind of stretching college football thin.
No, that's a great take on it and something that like I realized during the broadcast and like we've been the people that have been the most vocal.
Oh, about also it. Real quick. I just found it. There were 19 bowl games in 1993. So only 38 teams got to play in a bowl game.
But like we've been the people that have been most vocal about like ESPN not sending College Game Day to Dublin for a ranked matchup in week zero is extremely lame when it's the only game on their network the entire day. So that's like something that now in college football, like that's like unreal that would be the case. Like you said it in one of our chats yesterday, like I would rather have Fox call the game now than ESPN knowing that like game day is not going to be there. Like it's going to be kind of like a watered down production of sorts. And then the other thing like goes with your like this broadcast really aged well and how they did the production. It is so annoying now to watch a college football game that you can tell that they're drowning out the background noise and like the crowd noise. This era and this game specifically, there were multiple moments that the crowd got so loud that it didn't seem like there was 15,000 people there. And you know why? Because they didn't care that the crowd was drowning out the broadcast.
In 1993, you were able to hear when K-State was at the goal line. I think it was before the J.J. Smith short touchdown run. You could hear Chad Mays' snap count. Like you could hear it clear as day on the broadcast. And you're thinking, you know, 1993, like, it's pretty impressive that they were able to pick that up. Do you have anything else that aged well from this game?
Yeah, I have the Copper Bowl logo aged really well. And then I loved the white K-State end zone.
Oh, okay. And then they did that. There were a few other bowl games in Snyder 1.0 where it was white. Was the Fiesta Bowl?
It might have been the Fiesta Bowl.
Had white in there. Age poorly from this era. This K-State team showed a lot of skin with their jerseys. The cutoff jerseys were a big thing.
I love the cutoff jersey.
Well, I'm just saying you don't really see those anymore. I mean, they're not really allowed either. But it's just this style of jersey is just a little like, I don't know, what are we doing out here?
My first thing that was written down was Craig James. Just
yeah.
I don't really want to get into whole Craig James saga, but just Google what Craig James is doing now. He's a little bit crazy.
Oh, what is? Oh, I didn't know that there was Craig James stuff actively going on. I just still thought of his son in the closet with Mike Leach.
No, there's some crazy now with Craig James.
Okay.
You know, you brought it up with the MetLife blimp, but I have that as something that aged poorly because then it gets replaced by Goodyear.
Okay, listen. The real ones know that MetLife is the goat of the blimps in the sports world.
Yeah. You know?
I've only seen the MetLife blimp fly over Hutchinson, Kansas growing up for the 2006 U.S. Senior Open. The MetLife blimp, PGA Tour events, that's my goat. Goodyear, poser.
Do you have anything else? I have one more.
No, I don't actually. I was pretty pleased with this entire game, which I probably shocks people with how I act about things that are this old.
So one thing, it isn't like related to this game, but ties in college football did not age well. In this case, it's last year with a tie.
Yeah. Great point. Broadcaster's grade. What do you give him? I gave him an A+ just because of the whole production and Kevin Harlan was really good in this. And this was when Kevin Harlan was Kevin Harlan and not when Kevin Harlan was trying to be Kevin Harlan. And there's a difference and it makes a tremendous impact on the listening experience.
Yeah. This is an A+ for me as well.
Yeah. They deserved it. They earned it. All right, let's see. Finishing out MVP of this game, it's Andre Coleman for me.
Yeah, Andre Coleman.
Do you have an underrated player from this game?
Because we've only kind of mentioned him a little bit in passing, and he didn't have a great second half, so that kind of affects it. But JJ Smith, I think, is my underrated player.
He stood out. Like it was eye-popping watching him play. So we've kind of gone over the notable moments from the broadcast. I do want to highlight this. You got to see it in the clip before the punt return. This is the greatest sign to ever show up at a K-State game. It says it's got the ESPN down the side and it's even stupid people know KSU is number one. And the no obviously spelled with the N-O, not the K and the W. That to me, that's elite. So shout out to whoever made that sign. I hope you see this.
We've hit on a lot of stuff that's been notable from the broadcast. The one thing that I'll say, and like you kind of just touched on it, I loved the amount of flags and signs that were shown in the stadium that were in the stadium at this time. And then just all of the cuts to players looking dejected from Wyoming and the K-State jubilation on the sideline and then in the stands. And I just wish that we were in an era that like ESPN and people that broadcast college football really cared about the sport.
Yeah. So this is from just other takeaways from this game. Notables from the broadcast is seeing these people show up. The amount of future coaches and college administrators on this team is really kind of crazy when you think about it. Like just getting to see how it plays out and everything. So if you're looking here on this team, you have Kirby Hocutt and Laird Veach were linebackers together. Now the ADs at Texas Tech and Missouri. Andre Coleman obviously went on to be the offensive coordinator at K-State, also had stints coaching elsewhere. Mike Eckler has bounced around as a special teams coach throughout. Those were just the four that immediately showed up in the game. And I mean, there may have been others too.
Eric Wolford is the offensive line coach I think it's Alabama, or at least at one point he was at Alabama.
He was, I know he was at South Carolina at one point. Is he at Kentucky now? Yeah, he's at Kentucky now.
Yes.
Yep. So there you go. Yeah, like they're just all over the place. You can find it. And that's kind of an impressive feather in Bill's cap for this team. And we know that like just the year before this was Brent Venables last year on the staff.
Yeah.
So it's on the team as a player. So it's crazy the amount of guys that we know that Bill has had assistants and stuff, but his players are really what has driven his coaching tree. So we have that to go off of. Anything else that you want to give shouts out, notable moments, random players?
My random player from this game, And he came in the second half when things were way out of hand. Leon Edwards got a few carries.
How about that? Shout out. We'll close out here. Any what ifs for you from this one? I don't really have it. I mean, we talked about it. This is kind of the perfect culmination to end this season.
Oh, see, I have a what if from this game, and it's not even from, I guess it's not even from this game. It's more from this season. I told you I had a great one.
Okay, I'm ready for it.
Remember when you were on with Scott Wildcat, like beginning of the summer, peak
and
off,
what and game I would want back?
What game that you would want back? Like that's inconsequential. He asked me the same question. I think I have an answer for this.
Okay.
That's better than just like being petty and saying 07 KU. If K-State beats Iowa State in 1993, they go from being the worst team of the 80s to 4 years into Bill Snyder winning 10 games. That would be unheard of for that time period. Like winning 9 games, extremely impressive.
Yeah.
But winning 10 in 4 seasons of Bill for how bad it was to begin would have been incredible. Like, I had people talk to me about like this team like faced Colorado at its peak in a really, really good Nebraska and in Oklahoma. Well, they beat Oklahoma. They tied Colorado. They got their ass kicked by Nebraska, but that's besides the point.
Happens. Memorial Stadium, you know.
The Iowa State game in 93 is the inexcusable one because you just came off of the time where you tied Colorado, beat Oklahoma, and then you lost to a
team was 3-7 that year. So
if you beat Iowa State in 93, you win 10 games in 93. Like that would have been insane. And because you tied Colorado and beat Oklahoma, you win 10 games. You probably finish in the top 15, top 12 in 1993 after how bad it was in 87, 88, 89.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's a good one to throw out there. Final thing we got to do, we got to rate the game. I mean, I give it pretty high marks. It was enjoyable. The plays were fun. There were big plays galore. I give it a 9.1.
9.3 was my previous high for the Oklahoma 2019 game. This one is a 9.4 for me. This was so fun. Like I don't know if I'd watch another 93 game. Because the games that we talked about, like, I don't really want to see them tie Colorado. I think I'd watch them play Oklahoma in 93, though.
Yeah. No, but it was a fun game.
This was an incredible game. Atmosphere was awesome. The broadcast was awesome. And like, for two people that we hadn't really – we knew K-State won this game, like, how impactful it was to – like our parents and people of like that generation, but like it holds up extremely well.
Yeah, it does. All right. That'll do it for our 93 KSO Classic watching the Copper Bowl, K-State 52, Wyoming 17. Next up, a few hours from now, we will have the 2002 matchup with Iowa State. A look back for you. Also a very fun game that K-State kicked butt from start to finish. So, for Drew Galloway, I'm Mason Vo. Thanks for watching KSO Classic. Back again later today.